Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
What up, fam? It's the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Andy and Don with me. Hey, bros. How it goes? What's up, Andy?
What's up, bro? Good to have the fam together here for another episode.
That's right. All right, what are you going to say to ruin the vibe, Don?
I was going to ask if that was in contention for the name of the podcast, the Album Bros,
or the Album Bros,
the Albums Family. Dun-dun-dun-dun.
Ooh, you're onto something there. Nice. Might have to fight for those publishing rights, though. All right, so this is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, talking about them, living them, loving them,
laughing them.
Laughing them sometimes,
making them feel less than. We're talking about what families do, right? That's what,
wow.
Sorry.
We've got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about albums that involve family members. So we each are going to bring an album that we picked for discussion. Don's going to ask us a deep question, the deeper the better. And then we're going to have some shout-outs to some album-related items we're digging. And then we'll spin the wheel of musical discovery to find out what we're going to talk about next time. But today. But today, brothers and sisters, it's all about family.
We are family.
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, music can be an experience shared and enjoyed by family in the home. Some family members have forged successful recording careers together, including multiple generations of the Carter family, Sly and the Family Stone, the Allman Brothers Band, the Jackson Five, the Bee Gees, and the Jonas Brothers. Today, each of us will present an album that features multiple blood relatives. It's a family affair.
Turns out that brothers seem to be the most common in this space. But yeah, I think we all kind of looked for full families. How did you guys do in this family exploration?
I got a bag of brothers here for sure.
Bag of bros.
Throw out a few that top my list here. Devo. Listen to some of their stuff. Two Brothers in That Band. Bad Brains. Two Brothers in That Band. Fishbone.
Two Brothers.
Also Two Brothers. A couple modern groups as well. Cage the Elephant, Two Brothers. You guys familiar with them at all?
Yeah.
Yes.
Come a little closer, can you see?
Yeah, pretty good stuff. Mid-2000s. Obviously. And Jeff the Brotherhood was the other obvious kind of brother.
Ah, yes, yes.
They are brothers. Not named Jeff, but brothers. How about you, Don?
Well, I've often wanted to do the Everly Brothers on the show. I mean, because they were such an influential group, you know, towards folk and country, you know, with the harmonies. But a lot of their classic stuff, you know, it's not really on album. You know, it's just like collections of songs. But there was an interesting album called Two Yanks in England. All the songs were written by the group, the Hollies. That was a pretty good record. But I went elsewhere. Also thought about the Beach Boys. One of these days we'll do Pet Sounds. But I tend to think of that just being, you know, Brian Wilson, and then brothers are kind of just that voices. But some of the later stuff, like Surf's Up, you have Carl and Dennis Wilson taking a more active role in the creative direction of the band. So thought about that. Also, the Psychedelic Furs, Richard and Tim Butler are in that group. Oh. Album Forever Now is my favorite from 1982.
So I thought about the Judds, mother and daughter, Rockin' with the Rhythm, I think from like 1985. Van Halen, brothers, 1984 would have been my pick. AC/DC, Highway to Hell, brothers. And in both of those cases, it's not the singer, it's more the music behind, you know, with Van Halen and AC/DC. Right. And I thought about Pantera, the Bangles, where there's a couple of sisters, Carpenters, brother and sister, Allman Brothers, Bacon Brothers. And of course, I thought about the Brady Six.
Brady Six.
Yeah, you know, on the Brady Bunch when the kids formed a musical group.
Not the Silver Platters?
They were also the Silver Platters at one point, but...
What was the song they did?
Yeah, when it's time to change, then it's time to change.
All right, yes, yes.
And there's the Sunshine Day.
Of course. Yeah, I've got a compilation album, believe you me.
Nice.
Okay, so a lot to choose from, but I think we made some pretty good choices.
You choose me?
Obviously, you spend a great deal of time together, your sister, so can you still surprise each other?
Oh my god.
Apparently you can. Yeah.
Oh god, that wasn't even scary. Why did that scare me?
All right, that is the Sisters from the Swedish folk rock duo First Aid Kit. We're going to be talking about their second studio album, The Lion's Roar, which came out back in January of 2012. Let's play a little bit of the title cut, The Lion's Roar.
More like a lion's purr, but that's cool. I like it.
Yeah, so First Aid Kit is made up of Johanna and Clara Sodenberg from Stockholm, Sweden. Kind of rose to popularity in 2008 from a YouTube video they did of covering a Fleet Foxes song. But they've been involved in music since a very young age, writing their first songs at age 13. My clickbait headline for this album is Swedish Sisters Roar into International Folk Music Scene.
Roar!
This was really the record that kind of put them on the map, from my perspective at least, first time I heard about them. And I really came to love just kind of the sort of whimsical kind of country twinge sound of the folk music that they have going here. It's a little bit rough, I'd say, around the edges. But I think that, exudes a lot of personality, which I find pretty interesting. And these girls, I think they're just really good songwriters. I mean, it sounds like they've been doing it a while, even though they're pretty young on this record. They sound pretty comfortable with each other, and they use their voices to great effect. You guys, anything you want to contribute?
Sister.
They're not twins, but they're close in age. Yeah.
Yeah, they sound so similar. That's what's funny. It's almost like one person harmonizing with themselves. Their voices are as one throughout the album, and it makes it feel familial in a way, you know?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I think they do a great job with the harmony, man. They don't always sing in harmony, but when they do, they're right together. And they both handle the singing duties throughout the record. I guess they both handle the songwriting as well. Why don't we play another cut from the album? This is the last track. It's called King of the World.
I'm the king of the world!
Got that Johnny Cash Ring of Fire thing going on. I like that.
It does a little bit.
Yeah, so King of the World is the closing cut on the album. It features vocals from Connor Oberst, who was in that group Bright Eyes. Were they Australian? I can't remember where they came from.
I think from my neck of the woods, I think he might actually be
Midwest,
from Nebraska or something.
Nice. So yeah, I really love the spirit of that track, and I really like the opening cut, the Lion's Roar. And then the middle of the album, it gets quiet at times, and it gets a bit darker, and I like all those songs as well, but I thought maybe they could have balanced it out a little more. I'd like a few more of these kind of lighter weight sounding tracks to mix it up. My clickbait headline is First Aid Kit Heals with Melodic Old-Timey Folk. Yeah, this seemed like there was kind of a movement in this period, the end of the first decade of the 2000s into the next decade. You have Mumford & Sons. I was listening to the Decemberists a lot in this time period.
Mm-hmm.
I like this a lot, and I do wish that, country radio would embrace these kinds of sounds more than, more of the rock poppy stuff that they do.
Well, a lot of this does sound country, or even Americana or Swede-Ericana.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They don't sound Swedish.
I know, it doesn't sound like Swedish at all, really. I mean, I would never have guessed that. But you're right. I mean, it does pull a lot from Americana. And, you know, they're the break fans, like Johnny Cash. And actually, the next track we're going to play here is, you know, about Emmylou Harris and, mm-hmm. you know, other prominent folk characters that are mostly, you know, from the U.S. It's interesting. All right. Why don't we play another cut that I think does pull a lot from folk music? This is called Emmylou.
So that one's a bit of a tribute to country music legends like Gram Parsons, Emmylou Harris, June Carter, and Johnny Cash. You know, so mm-hmm. Those references are made very obvious, which I think is good. Sometimes I would prefer things to be hinted at, but for a new generation, I think it's important. You know, in 2012, a lot of the kids listening to this may not have caught the reference without, if they're like, there's a ring of fire and, you know, that kind of thing, they would have been like, eh. So saying yeah, the names, I think, you know. Yeah.
Someday there's going to be a song, I'll be your Robert Smith, I'll be your Morrissey.
Yeah, so my clickbait headline for this album, The Soderbergh Sisters' Recipe for Swedish Folk Delight. Bork, bork, bork. That's a Swedish chef reference from The Muppet Show.
Well done.
Very nice, very nice.
I'm sure Swedish people really appreciate that character. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the recipe is, the ingredients are two talented sisters, pitch-perfect harmonies, a pinch of indie charm, a cup of introspective lyrics, 3 tablespoons of guest contributions, and a sprinkle of Mike Mogus production magic. Enjoy yes. with your friends or savor alone on a rainy day. And the nutritional information is Metacritic rating 81 of 100, so universal acclaim, number 1 in Sweden, number 35 in UK, and over 250,000 copies sold worldwide. That's not bad for a little Swedish folk group. It's pretty impressive, actually. I'd never heard of them.
It's quite filling, I must say.
Yeah. A satisfying meal. And it's a pretty short album, too, so I guess you could say it's an Instant Pot recipe.
Thanks, everybody. The whole family is happy after this one.
I mean, I'm not sure it's a problem, but maybe, you know, one thing about groups that are sort of going back in time, in some ways it can feel more like a archaeological expedition or something rather than just like a musical experience.
I guess it depends. Sometimes it does. I mean, for me in this case, especially when it's people from other countries, I feel like it's more an interpretation. Mm-hmm. Synthesized with what their cultural experience is and then what items from American culture, country music, folk music, then influence them, then mixed with the folk of, I'm sure Sweden has its own flavor of folk music.
ABBA.
Yeah, ABBA. There you go. That's pretty much all I can think of.
Yeah. Well, they took a chance. Yes.
Nice. You know, this doesn't sound like totally set in the past to me. I think it has elements of like, you know, there's like an organ and some orchestral, you know, accompaniments and piano at times that I wouldn't associate with like Americana necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, I didn't know what to expect here when we started discussing what albums we'd pick. And I had low hopes, but I really did enjoy it. It's very comfortable. There's some warmth to it. And the synergy between the sisters is clear and good lyrics and enough to keep you satisfied. So, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, they seem to get along really well. The interviews I saw, the two of them together, they are very simpatico. Their follow-up album to this, which is called...
The Cat's Pajamas?
The Eye of the Tiger?
Their follow-up album, which is called Stay Gold, is probably the most... critical acclaim to other discography. So maybe start there if you're curious about them. But I think these first couple of records also have a lot of merit. And you can see a lot of their personality shine through. So once again, the album is The Lion's Roar by First Aid Kit.
I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
If you're enjoying the show, and we hope you are, do us a solid and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. Spotify, anyone? Maybe we made you laugh or you discovered an album you enjoy. Leaving a review keeps the show going and helps other music fans find us.
So we've always tried to compliment women. So when you were trying to compliment the women, like when you came up with the music, did you say, okay, we want to make a woman feel this kind of way? You know?
Who's that?
So that's the Isley Brothers. We're going to talk about an album from April 1977 called Go For Your Guns. This is the 15th album by the group, formed in Cincinnati, Ohio in 1954. At the time of this recording, there were five brothers active in the band: Ronald, Rudolph, and O'Kelly. Focus on the vocals.
What about Comet and Dasher? And
They were the vocalists, Ernie on guitar, Marvin on bass, and then there's a brother-in-law, Rudolph's brother-in-law, Chris Jasper, plays keyboards. Let's hear a song. This is Footsteps in the Dark.
I think that's what that lady was talking about in the intro there.
Yeah. Listening to this record, I couldn't remember where I knew that sample from, and it was that Ice Cube song, It Was a Good Day. Remember seeing that on Yo MTV Raps. God, so that's Ronald singing on that track, and his voice just sounds really incredible.
Yeah, it does.
And it's just such a cool sounding record. My headline for the album is, Go For Your Guns makes me want to shout, I love the Isley Brothers. You know you make me want to. Of course, the Isley Brothers, their first huge hit was the song Shout that everybody knows. I guess I knew that they were a really good band, but, you know, I hadn't listened to them. I mean, this run in the 70s where they were putting out all this kind of funk, R&B, soul stuff, it's really good.
Yeah.
You know, I was poking through, you know, four or five of these albums, and I could have picked any of them. Yeah, this album is really, really good.
These groups that, I guess, for lack of a better term, came from the sort of Motown era, the ones that were able to evolve, I think because of that experience, that previous experience with hit songs, and then the music landscape started changing, and they were inspired by these new things like Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye and all that was going on. Yeah, some of these are such great albums because they have that wisdom and experience behind them, but then with these new sounds being worked in, and excitement in the music, in the creation.
Yeah, we've covered so many great records from this era already, you know, with Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye, and, you know, even did Earth, Wind, and Fire. The list goes on. This is the opening cut of the album, The Pride, Part 1 and 2.
It's the bass that made Don pick this album.
I think you're right.
So that is the opener, and it's a funky groove, soulful vocals, really nice, intricate instrumentation, and it's got that the ability to kind of blend different elements, the rock, the jazz, the R&B sound, and that's throughout the album. There's even progressive rock moments in the album, in my opinion. The lyrics convey a message of self-respect, dignity, resilience, reflecting the Black experience during the Civil Rights Movement and beyond. It doesn't feel preachy. It just sounds more of a call to take pride in who you are and what we've accomplished and what is to come. And I really love that part of this era when these groups felt like they finally had a voice to not just talk about love and sex and whatever, but to start to talk about social issues.
They don't go quite as far as maybe some other groups of the time period, too, but it's definitely in the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a step in that direction. Yeah. My clickbait headline to describe the album: Get Your Funk On with the Isley Brothers, guaranteed to make your hips shake, your heart ache, and your mind contemplate.
Nice.
Yeah, that's good.
There's thinkers in there. There's sexy moments. There's just funky. You might even be inspired to start air bass guitar playing throughout some of these songs.
A lot of that.
Like I mentioned, progressive rock at times, long guitar solos, like just unexpected moments that made this a really enjoyable listen because it has so many pieces, just like a family, so many personalities, but it all works together. It's all unified. It all feels like a part of one thing. And I also, you know, I don't know if there was this thought in there at all, but the pride, You know, that's like a family of lions, right? And I wondered if they were thinking about that, because I thought about that a lot through this record.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that. Like, the they are the pride.
Yeah, I didn't think of it either.
Yeah, maybe. I mean...
No, totally. I'm sure that's what First Aid Kit had in mind.
Okay, well, let's take a voyage to Atlantis. That's the name of the song.
Hey, and that's my bit. Don't steal my bits, bits. And though I leave another
behind, I'll always come back. The guitar sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah. That track kind of floored me the first time I heard it, especially in comparison to the rest of the record, which, as we alluded to, is very, very funky and has a very driving rhythm to it. But there's a couple of ballads there, this and the Footsteps that we played initially, that I think, for me, like, really just sold me on their vocal chops, obviously, but also just this really just tender, soaring, sort of dreamy sound they do really, really well. So my clickbait headline for this album is, "The brothers are packing heat, but the ballads are what slayed this nerd." Yeah, I mean, the album's called Go For Your Guns, but it doesn't feel like a very... I don't know. I guess the funky tracks that we talked about, I guess, for me, didn't pack as much of an emotional heft as the rest of the album. Like, they're fun, and it's kind of like catnip for me, because I love that 70s funk sound. But I don't know. I don't think it is as interesting as some of the slower moments on here, at least for me. Yeah, and the album as a whole, I think, is pretty solid. There's, you know, nothing boring on it. And it has a real energy to it and kind of a propulsion to it, almost like a concert would. Especially the couple of the tracks are like part one, part two, where it kind of bleed into each other nicely. It feels very, very cohesive in that respect.
Yeah, and the title track being largely instrumental is also
surprising, right?
Something that normally drives me nuts, but it freaking works here.
Yeah, yeah. It nicely closes things up. A short record, but a lot happens. I mean, it feels like a couple of these songs are like epics, even though they're like 5 or 6 minutes long.
I bet Prince liked this record.
I bet he did.
Probably.
All right. Well, if you're feeling a little funky
or randy,
it's pretty sensuous. Yeah.
Check out the Isley Brothers' "Go For Your Guns" from 1977.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Now, deep questions by Don. So we've talked about some successful families in the music industry. What successful families have there been in other walks of life?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, obviously, yeah, like the big ones you could think of, like, you know, the Rockefellers and the Bushes or
Winklevoss twins.
Yeah, sure. Roosevelt's,
obviously, yeah. Kennedys, whoever.
Now, Bushes, is that the baked bean people or the political family? Because the baked beans are
that's hard to mess with that. The one that came to mind for me that I was most interested in talking about, I've been watching a lot of Sopranos clips on YouTube the last few months. Did you guys watch The Sopranos when that was on HBO?
Oh, yeah.
I watched it after, but I did. I watched the whole series. Good stuff.
Been through it many, many times.
I have yet to finish the whole series, but man, that show is amazingly gripping. And the family dynamic in there just kind of blows me away every time I see it. The things that they're willing to put up with because it's family, even if it's, you know, a very extended, you know, Italian kind of style family. Well, so, I mean, interesting family dynamics there, to say the least.
Just when they thought I was out, they pull me back in.
I went with something a little less dark. Tug and Tim McGraw. Tug McGraw being a American professional baseball relief pitcher. Played for the Mets. He coined the phrase, "You gotta believe," which became the rallying cry for the 73 Mets. And he helped get them to a World Series. And then his son, Tim McGraw, is the well-known country singer, actor, I guess, figurehead of modern country music in many ways.
Faith Hill's husband, right?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just when Tim McGraw was becoming popular, I remember hearing his dad was a professional baseball player, and they had a kind of strained relationship. But a lot of times, you know, you got your Mahomeses and your other families where sports guys beget sports guys. And I think it's really cool that Tim found his own path and has been incredibly successful. So what you got, Don?
Well, I mean, there's so many examples out there. You know, of course, the Bronte sisters, you know, so important to my upbringing.
Who is that? The Bronte sisters?
Charlotte Bronte, Emily Bronte, Wuthering Heights. And anyway, I was pretending I was well-read. Okay. No, instead, professional wrestling. You guys ever hear the, like, the Von Erichs? There was, like, Gary Von Erich. I mean, it's just, like, there's, like, 15 of them, generations of wrestlers, and I feel like all of them came to, like, tragic ends. I think there's a movie coming out or a movie out that's going to deal with the Von Erich family, so stay tuned for that. Anyway.
What about the Poffo family?
Oh, Leapin' Lanny and Macho Man, right?
Yeah. And their dad was Angelo.
Oh, I didn't know
Poffo, Angelo. Also a wrestler, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, what other successful families are out there? Let us know on Instagram and Facebook, or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
Yeah, good. The best band of all today on the planet. It's a fact.
God, this guy's...
Did you catch that? Champagne Supernova up your bum? Yeah, so the Brothers Gallagher, Broasis.
Broasis, okay.
Again, comes down to the brothers, and I picked the album What's the Story, Morning Glory from October of 1995. I think it's super well known, many, many hits. Let's just jump into it, shall we?
Let's.
Don't look back in anger.
Stand up beside the fireplace, take that look from off your face.
Okay, so the album itself recorded in 15 days, which is just nuts to me. The album produced 4 major hit singles in the UK. Some might say Don't Look Back in Anger, Roll With It, and Wonderwall. And of course, we can't forget Champagne Supernova. Big, big album in its day. And the brothers' personalities and their friction was part of what made them an interesting band. Beyond just the music, it was their interviews. You never knew what crazy shit they're going to say.
Drama.
And then 2009, they ended up breaking up with yet another fight backstage.
Now, were they mostly fighting over the music, or was it more like interpersonal family history stuff,
driving each other nuts,
brotherly love kind of stuff?
It's kind of funny that, like, supposedly Noel joined the group afterwards, and then he became like the creative force of the band.
My understanding is that was the agreement, was that he would only join if he got to be the boss.
And why was he so sought after? Like, had he done anything at that point?
No, I think it was just his probably the songs he had been writing. Maybe they didn't have any songs, or direction. I don't know. But yes, the band did exist before him, although I doubt it existed for long. But yeah.
That's just a hell of an ego to say, yeah, I'll join your band, but I want complete creative control over everything.
Well, when you're the biggest band of all time ever, it's a fact, you know.
Touche.
My clickbait headline for this album: Oasis' iconic album, What's the Story, Morning Glory, defined by hits and heckling. That strained brotherly relationship. They did an Unplugged at the height of their celebrity, and Liam had a bit of a sore throat and didn't want to perform, so they had to go on. Noel did all the vocals, but from the balcony throughout the entire broadcast, Liam was heckling, sold off, that kind of stuff during the show. And then wanted to go at the end, he wanted to do the last song, and yeah, they told him, get lost. So just like bad behavior. It's just like, they had such an attitude, man. And that's part of what makes them cool. And if you take that overinflated attitude and apply it while listening to the album, it adds to the grandiosity of the songs, just so over the top, all of it. Mm. All right, let's listen to a little bit of a Champagne Supernova.
Slowly walking down the hall, faster than a cannonball.
That was the sixth and final single off the album. Not too bad. Jeez. And 50% of your album is singles. Features Paul Weller on guitar and backing vocals. Pretty cool. Yeah, I was all excited. I was going to, you know, go to genius.com and find out what the song was about, finally, after hearing it a bajillion times.
Nobody knows.
Yeah. I had an interview with, I think it was Noel, who said he didn't really know what the song was about, even after 30 years of playing it.
Yeah, I saw similar stuff about pretty much all the songs, where it was like, it means what it means to the listener.
Right, exactly. Biggest cop-out ever.
Sort of Beatles-ish in that way, right? That
yeah.
You know, stream of consciousness kind of nonsense.
Yeah. Well, my clickbait headline for this album is, Morning Glory finally accepts that the story is nonsense. Says it's okay as long as you keep talking with that sexy British accent. I mean, this song, I was really just kind of listening to, you know, radio pretty seriously at this age in the mid-90s. And this album, these singles were just so big and so impactful at that time period. Very hard to escape. And largely coming back to it, I think the singles are still pretty enjoyable. I do enjoy Champagne Supernova, even though it's probably about 4 minutes longer than it needs to be. But the rest of the record here, I don't know, man. It just doesn't really do much for me. I don't think it's bad or boring by any means, but I think what bothers me most about Oasis is just like the comparisons to all the different classic British groups, and putting them on that same level just seems insane to me. Like, I don't think there's nearly as much going on this record in terms of, I mean, any Beatles record, not even in the ballpark in terms of creativity or, you know, just number of different ideas in each song. There's cool stuff here, and they're good together. And I love how kind of like that big sweeping strings and all that kind of feed into the kind of sparse lyrics. And you do get a lot of emotion out of these songs, but I just think that they're way overrated.
Yeah, I mean, it's inspired by, very strongly inspired by their heroes, right? And especially John Lennon. I mean, that line, "'cause you said the brains I had went to my head," from Don't Look Back in Anger, were from an interview that John Lennon did. And Noel was like, I've got to use that. I need to put that in a song somehow. And I think that was really inspirations from David Bowie and Suede and everything else were the foundation for every song. Bits and pieces. And like we talked about with the meanings, I think the meaning was more behind the inspiration and the moments that tickled Noel's fancy. But yeah, it is odd to try to analyze an album that claims to not mean anything specific, you know. All right, it's time for a little Morning Glory. That's the song we're playing.
So that song actually has another Beatles reference in there. It has the lyric, "Tomorrow never knows what it doesn't know too soon." But I actually, you know, I maybe I've been hanging out with Dude too much, but I just found myself just liking all the rockin' tunes, kind of craving more of it. You know, I was just like really getting into it. And then, you know, I felt like the hits, like the melodic ballads and stuff, you know, it's hard to say they weren't well executed because they were huge hits, but I don't know. I guess I wanted less of that and more of the rock.
I think it's because those moments were the most Oasis, you know, maybe influenced more by Stone Roses and bands of that time, and less Beatley, even though there might be lyrical references. It sounded more like the music of the time, more alt rock, grunginess sort of stuff.
Yeah, this is pretty polished up compared to their debut record, if I recall correctly. That's much more stripped back, and this is much more plush, bigger sounding.
Yeah, my clickbait headline is, Gallagher Brothers should stop with Beatles shit and stick to garage rock.
Well, I guess
I would agree with that one.
That clears it up.
But yeah, you know, it's I agree with Andy that, I mean, as far as creativity and, you know, being groundbreaking or anything, you know, these guys just aren't, you know, in the same ballpark as the people who influence them. And yet there's still something kind of compelling about the music. And maybe it's the, you know, don't give a fuck attitude. It's kind of Sex Pistols-ish or something. Like, because I think they kind of know that their lyrics are rubbish. And see, I use the term rubbish.
Yes.
And that their music is kind of ripoffs of everything else. But somehow it works. I think Liam is like just a charismatic and compelling frontman. And I think it doesn't work quite as well on the ballads. Although I always liked the rhythm of backbeat, the word is on the street.
I do find that catchy too.
Yeah.
Composition wise, it's great stuff. It's just, it really depends on how much you buy into the Beatles part, or if you just kind of let it wash over you and enjoy the listen. And that's what I've learned to do. Yeah. I used to be very judgy about it being too copycatty, but it's good. So, I mean, these guys, I wish they would shake hands and make up and have one more Oasis party, but I kind of doubt that's going to happen.
Brothers don't shake hands. Brothers gotta hug.
Go hug. Gallagher Brothers.
Hug it out, guys. Hug it out.
All right, so that was Oasis. What's the story, Morning Glory?
Definitely, maybe check it out.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right, bros. Well, what are you guys digging lately?
All right, I got a handful of things here in my new release bag here. The first one is from Future and Metro Boomin. They have a new collab. I guess it's a full-length album here. It's called We Don't Trust You. Very much in line with what Future has been doing the last decade or so here. Some very kind of ethereal trap rap.
Yeah, I feel like this is a really lost opportunity. They should have gotten Kirk Cousins to contribute to like that.
You like that?
Oh, yeah.
Plus, Kirk Cousins just screams trap.
Yeah, totally. Be good to have in the background that is, yeah, like that? What? Yeah. Gotta have that guy. All right, one other hip-hop related album. Now, this was not nearly as true to the original art form. So it's from a guy called Cemetery, who is into this genre that has emerged in the last few years called horrorcore, which is like a very small niche subgenre of hip-hop. The album is called Bloody Angel. It's fairly controversial, but I found it pretty interesting. It's definitely nice.
Sounds sort of goth.
Yeah.
You know, a little ministry or something, you know?
Oh, yeah. There's a heavy goth element. The album cover, he's got like a hockey mask on. He's like covered in blood and he's got like black wings and it's like super goth. But I think pretty interesting. Definitely like a new sound, I would say. Whether or not it's for everybody, I think is questionable, but I think it's interesting that it exists. And last one for me is a live release from Alice Coltrane of her 1971 concert at Carnegie Hall. Alice, someone we talked about on the show, I think at least once or twice.
Yeah.
Pianist, harpist, band leader, married to John Coltrane, excellent jazz musician in her own right. This is a really good concert. It's only like 4 or 5 songs. It's probably a little over an hour. Really good stuff, in my opinion. She's severely underrated.
She must have been practicing a lot.
Yeah, like how this is live is, I mean, other than the sort of go with the flow sound, it the recording quality is quite good.
Yeah, it sounds really good. Yeah, if you haven't heard her stuff, it's a pretty good place to start because it does cover a lot of her more popular songs. What you been digging on down?
Well, I was listening to the Broken Record podcast, and Brandi Carlile was on there.
Rick Rubin really needs a shout out, so yeah, he needs help.
So Brandi Carlile was on there with a young artist who she just produced named Tish Melton, a very young songwriter. She's like 17 or 18. She has an EP that Brandi Carlile produced called When We're Older, so I've been listening to that a little bit. Less country, kind of more in that like boy genius vein.
Mm. Yeah. Sounds very genius-y. I'll have to give it a listen.
This might be a golden era for young female songwriters.
Geniuses.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so a couple episodes ago, we did briefly reference Beyoncé's upcoming album, Cowboy Carter. And I did have occasion to actually listen to the whole thing. There's interesting little vignettes and lots of country references, but it's still very much her own sound. Swampy at times, like, I don't know.
I was underwhelmed how much country it was. Like, there are country songs on there, but a lot of it is, at least I thought, still sounded like traditional Beyoncé.
I think maybe it's more of an undercurrent of Texas and her upbringing and family and things that make it why it's her country album.
It feels like Western sort of Springfield.
Isn't she from Texas? Okay. Just kidding.
I should also mention that she does a cover of Jolene by Dolly Parton, and Dolly Parton and Willie Nelson are both featured on the album in those vignettes I mentioned, but there is a cover of Blackbird by the Beatles, which apparently Paul McCartney himself gave permission for her to do, and it kind of sounds to me like it might be the original track under there, not new guitar work, but I'm not sure about that. But yeah, some interesting risks, some interesting decisions, but certainly a reflection of Beyonce, and whether or not you want to call it a country album is up to you, but it's definitely coming from her roots, a reflection of her and her upbringing. So I'm going to keep listening and see what happens. Once again, I went to the record store and I picked up a few things. And one was an album that I grew up loving. I had on cassette. The album Big Bam Boom by Daryl Hall and John Oates, 1984. And it's just Hall & Oates. I mean, what else can you say? It's poppy. It's blue-eyed soul. It's just so 80s and still so much fun to listen to, and the album cover is so splashy.
Guess you had to be there.
Ouch.
Yeah, I actually had this on cassette as well. I think I got it at Caldor. I paid for it.
Ooh, he paid for this one. Okay, good.
Caldor. Wow, nice. Going back.
All right, well, what are you digging? Let us know. Hit us up on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, and also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about that time on the show when I'm reminded of the great actor and comic George Burns, who said, "Happiness is having a large, loving, caring, close-knit family in another city."
There you go.
With that in mind, let's bring out my friend and yours, Wadbot, to find out what we'll be discovering on next week's show.
Yeah, so we're going to disrupt the Wheel of Musical Discovery because a big event is coming up for Album and Music Lovers Record Store Day 2024. So we're going to dive into the list of releases for that day and find some albums to discuss.
Yeah, lots of rarities and reissues and whatnot to sort through. Should be fun.
I celebrate privately.
Just go to the record store and visit your friends.
Don't forget, you can always suggest topics for the Wheel of Musical Discovery on our website, albumnerds.com, as well as vote for any ongoing Album Nerds Hall of Fame nominations.
Well, do you have your eye on any Record Store Day releases? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. Also, please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you once again for joining us here on the Album Nerds Podcast. We'll catch you next time with some Record Store Day finds. 420, smoke them if you got them.
What does that mean? I'll catch everybody next week. Thanks for listening.
I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.
Who's Janelle?
About you now.